sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Stocktoberfest is here. The dollar is surging, and we have a new format that we're going to be testing. We'll see if you like it. This is Andrew Horowitz, and thanks for joining me on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is episode number, we got 232. We are goodbye, saying goodbye to September. That was a rough month. I mean, wow. You saw commodities just sinking, the markets come off hard. We're going to talk about that. I want to talk first about the new format that we're just testing. We're going to see how this works out. It's just a trial. Hopefully this will expand into something a little bit more robust. But basically what we're going to do is have an enhanced podcast, whereas we have charts and data and links and things like that that you'll be able to use on your various mobile devices, iTunes, on the web. So you need to see if this actually works and give me some feedback to see if it's working. So we're going to put in a few different items today as we talk about the markets and about the European situation, some of the risk factors, the dollar, et cetera. And what you could do is you can actually watch some of these, some of my favorite indicators on these areas as we talk about it. And again, if you have an iPad or an iPhone or an iPod or maybe an Android device or something else that has a smart player involved in it, this should, again, the word is should, be able to be listened to and you can see it at the same time. Again, please do me a favor. Give me your honest feedback to see if this is working. Because if it doesn't work and it's kind of lousy, again, this is just a trial. You know what? We're not going to do it. But if you do like it, we could try to expand it a little bit more and find out what you want to see and then work that into the program as well. But like I said, Stocktoberfest is here. And this is where we have asked you over the last several weeks to send in your various thoughts on, I want to take a look at what stock and, you know, give me an idea of the maybe the benefit of investing or not investing in this. And we got an overwhelming response. We have actually so many that we had to cull through. We're going to almost have 2 to 3 a day on average for the next month that we're going to post on the website. Now, what we've done is we put a schedule on the website, on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, where you can actually go and you can find out what day the stock, if it's yours or any other stock that's on the list, is going to be analyzed. And what we're going to do is we're going to put our one sheet, which we enhanced a bit to have it a little bit more user-friendly so that you understand what's going on, plus a full analysis of why it makes or doesn't make the grade, the various scores that we have. Now, just to give you a background in that, we have something called the Quantifund Techno. You know about that. And it's the quantitative analysis, and it's the fundamental analysis, kind of the look under the hood and the balance sheet and the cash flow statements and the fundamentals of the company. And then we have the technicals, the charts. And each of these various components comes together with several dozens of different indicators and levels behind the scenes that we actually will score. And we'll use different weightings depending on what we want the score to be. So if we have a better earnings growth for a company, well, that may score higher and be weighted higher. Whereas, let's say, a MACD signal is not as strongly weighted in our technical analysis. And what we do is we're going to give it actually two scores, because the Q score, which is our quantitative score, that would only qualify if it's within the screening universe. So these are stocks that are outside the universe and of what we would keep inside of our pick zone, if you will. And so what we did is we did away with that, and we have the two scores that are left. So we have the F score, which is the fundamental score, and the T score, the technical score. And then you get a total score, and then you'll see if it's rated as a we think it's a sell or not hold it, or if it's a strong buy at this point. And we also mix in our market trend indicator, which gives us an idea of the severity of the move on the market. Is the market coming out of a rally and into a correction, or maybe just softening up, or is it going the other way? In other words, down to up. And depending on where you are in that realm, we have three different notches, is dependent on how strong and how much you're going to be involved in either the long side of the market or the short side. Okay? So when we actually are looking at this, we're going to put this all on the website. We're going to put this all on the various stock that's chosen. Your name will be on there if you were if you sent in the request. And you'll have a month's worth of analysis of, I don't know, 60 or so stocks, 70 stocks. So anyway, check that out. We'll put a link in the show notes for that. Also, will be in the top of the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We're going to leave the schedule right there where you can click on it, and then you can bookmark it and do whatever you want with that. All right, so let's start out with talking about last quarter and what happened through this year, and talk about the absolute devastation that was brought upon the markets. I mean, we're talking some very serious numbers here. It doesn't really, I don't know, in a way, it didn't really seem like it was, you know, as bad as it was. But you look at the Dow, we're talking about, you know, year to date down 5.5%, 9% for the quarter, NASDAQ down 11%, Russell down 17% year to date so far, and Brazil down 24%. And then you kind of hop over and you take a look at what's going on in Asia, and then you say, wow, that's now we're talking some serious numbers. I mean, you know, this is not a, you know, I guess a simple correction. It's you know, a much deeper situation where central banks have been, you know, absolutely just doing everything they can in most countries to curtail their move. But yet at the same time, over here, what we're seeing is that, you know, we have a central bank that's continuing to just, you know, spend and do whatever they want to do. So, you know, you add that to the problems that we're having in Europe, and you have to realize, I think, that there's something very significant and very, very worrisome about the markets. There's nothing new about that. But just looking at the returns, when we're looking at Europe, for example, you know, for example, Germany was down 12% for the quarter and 20% for the year. You know, and Spain has just been getting just crushed. And France, probably the one that I've told you about, I'm the most concerned about. The one particular country that I'm the most concerned about is France, because if you look at the amount of sovereign debt that they hold from countries such as Italy, but mostly Greece, and I mean, it's really just an incredible amount. And this is why Sarkozy is pressing so hard with Trichet to just make sure that, you know, they keep this thing alive, because they don't want Greece going down, because essentially if Greece goes down, you know, so does France. Now, just to talk about that for a second, you know, what happened last week was really interesting. You know, we had the 17 required votes to get the fund, the Financial Stability Fund, to have enough legs at the 400 billion mark or so to do what they have to do in order to fund the bonds and the various deficits of the countries like Greece and Italy. You know, Greece keeps on saying that they're definitely going to get there and they're going to make their numbers, but already we're finding just over this weekend that they have already said that they cannot meet their deficit numbers. And what they're doing then is they're just going to basically fire all the civil, it looks like they're just going to fire all the civil workers. It's not funny for them, but I mean, it's just, what's funny about it is how ridiculous the Greek government is. And, you know, I suppose how much of a fool they take everybody for. And maybe they are. In the end, Greece is no way going to pay. They just can't pay their debts. There's no way. I mean, they could do whatever they want to make it look like they're going to have the money to do what they do, but there is just absolutely no way, in my opinion, that Greece can pay their debts. Now, one of the things you want to look at, because, you know, it's not only the markets that are showing us that there is this, you know, real distinct problem right now, but there's a lot of different indicators that we can look at, risk indicators that I like to look at, as a matter of fact. And when I look at these, for example, in Europe, well, we're looking at things like the cost to insure the euro, or I guess the differential between the euro and the dollar, and how much it would actually cost you to basically say, okay, on a forward basis, how much risk am I willing to take if I'm going to be buying euros? And you have to then, in what currency, but let's say dollars. Well, There's something called there's an index called the Euro USD 3-month basis swap. So it's a swap of the two currencies, essentially, keeping it easy. And when that number, I think I've written about this several times, when that number gets near negative 100, that is a gigantic warning sign that really liquidity is drying up. Nobody really wants to be involved in that currency. And I think the high back in the days of Lehman was somewhere about negative 150, 60. It really spiked. Well, we've seen it already cross over the negative 100 level, and it's currently sitting at about 104, negative 104. It went as high as about 114 earlier in the month. That is not showing any signs of abating. And the problem you have right now is that when you look at this situation with regard to the euro, even though it's being held up maybe by China, maybe the currency buyers are holding it up, maybe Europe is holding it up, the fact is that the liquidity is pretty much out. We looked at a study that showed a run on the banks last week. And the amount of money that's being extracted from Greek banks is just extraordinary. Just an amazing amount of money. That's why we're seeing bonds in the U.S. do so well, even after we saw the downgrade of credit. But a couple other things I want you to take a look at. And again, these are hopefully streaming on your device, or you're seeing it on the web, or you can see these things. So again, give me back your opinion of what's going on here. But one of the other things that you want to look at is how much money is really being borrowed by the various banks, and how much are they actually putting on deposit with their equivalent of their Fed. So what's happening is we look at these ECB overnight facilities, and there's a couple different ways to look at these, but this is the deposit facility. So how much money is being put at the ECB, or again, their Fed, their central bank, for safekeeping overnight? And why is that important? Let's think about that for a second. You say, oh, that's good. There's a lot more money going into the system. No, it's not good, because what this is telling us is the trust factor of lending money on an overnight basis to bank, to financial institution to financial institution. As this goes up, and as there's more money that is being put for safekeeping with the ECB, we're seeing that there really is a lack of liquidity and a lack of any trust that's going on. This is exactly what happened back in the days when, Lehman and Bear Stearns went down. It was just a very quick evaporation of trust. And that's what's happening. And I got to tell you something. The European leaders are not doing anything to really convey that there is anything more than, games being played. A lot of rhetoric without any action. So right now there is this whole, as I see it at least, there is this incredible level of mistrust, a lack of any kind of desire to create liquidity in the region, because there's just no plan set in place at this point. And when that's the case, you have to say, well, unfortunately, what we have here is a circumstance where, things are not going to get better until one of two things happens. Either we get a resolution to the Greek situation, or we just get a total collapse of this area and then, kind of just flush it out. Kind of like a forest, right? When a forest burns down and then it just regrows. That's kind of like what we're seeing right now with this. Now, another thing that we like to look at is, the cost of insuring the banks. This is something that's important. You want to look at how much it costs to actually ensure the various default possibilities. And you've seen this before. We call it CDS. And the CDS is credit default swaps. And you could see that it has been rising steadily since, let's say, June and July. And this is the overall European financial CDS that we're talking about here. So the overall, the cost to insure the financial markets, in terms of if you were to average it and talk about it, just a general, segment. So now we're not talking about one bank. We're not talking about one financial institution. We're talking about a broad base, kind of an index. And the financial CDS have just rising and rising. These banks are in big trouble, and they don't want to obviously express that because, they want to keep up the spirits. There was a great article, I think it was in Bloomberg Markets Magazine this month, actually. And it talked about how much money was actually borrowed from the Fed during the biggest crisis points of 2008, 2009 by the various banks. And one of the things that caught my eye, there was a great chart. It was a 3D chart. They talked about how there was I think it was Morgan Stanley. At the time when they received close to, $80 or $90 billion of a bailout, they came out and said that their balance sheets were clean and everything was doing well. It was the day that they actually received this gigantic amount. And we've seen that time and time again, that you'll see banks, everybody talking about how great things are, but in the fact, in the background, things are really not what they are. So I think this is catching on a little bit. People are starting to get a little bit cranky, on this. And if you look at the actual performance of the banks, I mean, we're talking about some, very serious damage because, it's more than just a lack of trust at this point. It's kind of I think it's investors are just fed up with playing this game and with having the hassle involved in an unknown circumstance because the risk is so great. 14, 15% moves on a daily basis. Pretty ugly when it comes to, a one stock. And we've seen that a lot lately. So a couple other points that I just want to mention is that when I think the biggest things that are going to be haunting us right now in terms of market issues are the whole idea that we are stuck in a downtrend of economic activity. It is it's a spiral where on the way up and the way down, it's self-fulfilling and it feeds upon itself. And what's happening now is because we're seeing the feds and central banks around the world trying to drain liquidity because the rampant inflation in the emerging markets like Brazil and India, China, what's happening is it's working directly against growth. Austerity in Europe, I don't care what any of these economists say, there is no way they could tell me, and I know you're probably thinking the same thing, how do you get growth out of austerity? Think about your own situation. If you're not going to be spending money and you're putting away your wallet, how are you going to acquire things? You're not. Growth is all a process of the acquisition of items that have to be manufactured or grown, or that doesn't happen during a period of austerity. Tightening of the belts means that you're going to be saving money and not spending. Savings rate is going up. So, you have to, again, wonder what is going on in terms of some of these economists that keep on saying that the growth cycle is still here and the growth engine is still working. Over the weekend, we saw that China came out with their manufacturing numbers. There's a few of them. We're still waiting on one, which is their service sector. We have like the ISM, which is coming out Monday, which there is a good chance it may be under 50. There's a very good chance. With the last we saw with the Philly and the Chicago, New York, there is a very good chance that, and hopefully not, but that we may see a contraction in the manufacturing sector in the last period. If not, it's going to be very close to that, I must tell you. With consumer confidence at the low level that it is, manufacturing really dropping, GDP at 1.3%, I just don't see any kind of real way for us to see a dramatic amount of activity. Now, there may be a statistical aberration there that we've seen before, like in the jobs numbers, that you see all of a sudden a really good number, like we saw last week with initial claims. But you know what? I think that manufacturing is really an area right now that is going to be slowing down significantly. And we're seeing that not only here, but around the world. Now, China came out with their numbers. There was two sets. One is the HSBC number, which is more of the smaller businesses. It's not the official, quote-unquote, country's official manufacturing index, but it's something that's well-respected. And then they also came out with the actual number through the China government, their actual statistics ministry. Now, what we saw was that, again, for the second or third month, the HSBC was under 50, about 49 and change, showing that small companies and medium-sized companies are contracting and slowing down dramatically. And lo and behold, the other index put out by the official statistics ministry was a little bit higher than expected by 0.1. I find it incredibly funny how it always seems that they beat by a tenth of a percent. I mean, that's pretty close. In the United States, I think that we have a pretty tight economic statistical organization here, and they miss it pretty bad, all the analysts, all the time. And in China, they seem to be right on. So I wonder if there's something about the effect of analysts on what the numbers are going to be, because it's pretty interesting how it always seems to come just a little bit above. But nonetheless, that does show that the Chinese manufacturing segment is still producing, supposedly from reasonable exports and internal demand. We'll see how that goes and that plays when Congress is now taking up, once again, their currency manipulation discussion. Like, we don't have enough problems already with what's going on with China and the protectionism that's going on around the world. They got to start starting up with this crap again. I mean, Congress really needs to shut down for a while and just cool it, because they're just making a lot of trouble for a lot of people. And I don't know, maybe they don't notice, but things are kind of falling apart around them from the things that they're doing. So maybe they should just calm down a little bit. Now, when you look at the manufacturing situation, I'm going to come to a point of all this, by the way. You know, you're seeing that there has been a real negative sentiment when it comes to advisors, right? You know, we track three or four different things that I like to watch almost on a regular, not daily, but on a weekly basis. And the AAII Bullish Percent Index is, and you can kind of see that right now, put up that chart, where you have a very, very negative tone. If you notice the orange and yellow line there, there's a very negative tone to the overall individual investor, and the same goes for advisors, but individual investor, and there's kind of this trend of just, you know, throwing up their hands and saying, you know, I'm not involved, I'm not getting involved, I'm very negative on this. Oftentimes what you do see, and if you can see this, is when despair, disgust, and bearishness becomes so heightened, it is almost incredible that it's about that time, give or take, that all of a sudden, lo and behold, a market rally takes hold. So here's a lesson, and I think what we all need to keep in the back of our pocket and just kind of think about it all times. It's not so much how we feel at any given short-term juncture, right? Because that has no effect on market action. You know, look at what happened last week on Thursday. Out of nowhere, the markets gap up 1.7%, come down 1.5%, and then finish the day up 1%. There was no news on that. It was a short-covering rally into the end of the month, thinking that there'd be a great move, and there wasn't. It was all taken back on Friday. Now, when we see this kind of negativity building, number one, it is something to be aware of, because the negativity will mean people will be selling their stocks, and then you're not going to see, obviously, a lot of the retail support out there. But at the same time, you know, watch for when things get really so desperate, and watch for these lows to come in, like we saw back in, back in April and May. And if you even look back further, back in August of 2010, I mean, you saw these gigantic spike downs, and then all of a sudden things turned around pretty quickly. So it's a contrary indicator, because emotions do get in the way, and that's why we like to do our quanta fund to technet, because when you get involved in the emotional side of this, it's pretty difficult to separate yourself from what you may think is right, what should happen, and, you know, pressing on in what you believe is a cheap stock or in a bad market. You know, you hear all the time about what's a cheap stock. Oh, this stock is cheap, it's cheap. And then you turn around, it's 10% next week, even cheaper. You know, I saw Doug Kass on Twitter last week, and he said that he's pressing his shorts into Friday. Pressing his longs into Friday. Adding to them. I'm thinking, why is he fighting the tape so much? You know, there's a time and a place. There's a time when the tape seems really overdone on a short-term basis, that it may be very wise to, you know, get involved in something. But usually there's a reason why it's moving in the direction it's moving. And I just don't see that we're at that point of desperation yet, and a point where there's, you know, so much negativity. Another thing that you want to look at and you want to keep aware of is there's another indicator that you want to look at, and what is called the put-to-call ratio. Now, again, same thing. It's kind of a contrary indicator. When you see that there is a divergence or a move very spiky high, you know, it kind of moves a lot of puts being called versus calls. So if you think about this for a second, what does this mean? When you have just a massive amount of volume going into puts and not a lot of going into calls, what you're going to get is a much greater amount of the put-call ratio, right? It's just going to be really swaying towards the put side. Negativity's out there, concern, despair, disgust, fear, worry, all that's going into it, protection of my portfolio, I'm going to make money on the down, all that's going into play when it comes to the put-call ratio. So if you look at this chart, actually, it's really, we've inverted the coloring so that when the put-call ratio is at its highest, it's green, meaning it's a contrary indicator and it's something that you want to look at and pay attention to. And when it's at its lowest, there's complacency. People are just buying calls. They don't think things are going to go down. And if you actually look at the comparison, we overlaid the S&P 500 with this. It's kind of interesting that it really does work kind of opposite. And I think that's the message here that I want to kind of get across, is that the human factor in investing is such a difficult thing to keep on top of, especially if you have machines that you're investing against. How do you think that you could possibly, you know, invest against someone who doesn't have an emotional stake in it? It's kind of like playing blackjack with your money and playing either one of two ways. You play by the rules that you know that you're supposed to hit on certain cards or not, or you say, I have a feeling and I'm not going to hit on that card, and then you realize, oh boy, I should have hit. How many times that happened, right? I mean, it happens all the time when you start playing emotionally. The reason why the house wins is they have a mathematical equation, a ratio, and they know if they have a little bit of an edge, the longer you play, the better their edge is, even if you play identical to them because the odds are in their favor. What you have to do is cut out the odds being in the favor of the other side. And part of that is that you stand on conviction when you believe that there is a good fundamental or technical rationale, and you follow the trend, because the market's always right. And what you do is you protect your portfolio and you have a balance. Now is not the time to be cavalier. You look at another thing, and this is the final one in the series that I want to kind of bring up. It's the McClellan Oscillator. We've had, I think Tom actually is going to be on soon. But the McClellan Oscillator, you know, if you take a look at this, this is measuring the advancers and decliners on the New York Stock Exchange, and it puts in a couple different calculations in there. But basically, what it shows us is that when these lines, when you see that the McClellan Oscillator is moving above zero, okay, and it's staying above zero in a pretty, you know, reasonable pattern. So it's kind of bumping up and down, above 150, maybe up 200, zero, up. That's a reasonable rally time where stocks are actually advancing very nicely. When you see this hardcore drop like we had in the beginning of August, where it hit a negative 450, which is one of the, if not the lowest levels that has been seen in, I think it's possibly forever, but it's low. That's a low number. You know, when I market, I think that above 150 and a below 150, really 200, negative 200, are the extreme zones. You kind of can see that the oscillator kind of stays between those levels. Once you get beyond that, you start getting a very contrarian note, alert, a alarm that should go off about what's going on in the market. Because when you see those numbers hit all the way down on the bottom, again, we inverted the colors so that green is actually a time where markets may be bottoming, and red is a time when they're overdone. But when you notice the pattern, there's a few other patterns in the McClellan Oscillator that you want to look at, is, you know, when everybody's dumping shares, like we saw last week, I mean, the amount of leaders that got just blasted at the end of the week was just startling. Finally, we recommended a short, I think about a week and a half ago on Priceline. Finally, I mean, went from about 420 down about 10%. And Apple even came off about 8 or 9%. Lululemon has just been crushed. And you go down the list of all the companies like Fossil that has been just a great company, just obliterated. Steel companies are down 50%. Banks down 50, 60%. Even the healthcare is getting hurt. Not as much. Utilities, the best performing sector this year. But quality company after quality company, remember the F5s, the 8 packets, all these, they are just, I mean, the charts are sad to look at. I mean, they're sad to look at. I will tell you, though, that some of these are going to be a bargain the next round, and there will be a turn in the markets. Boy, there's going to be some great bargains out there. The Chinese stocks, did you see Baidu, Sina, Sohu? You see Focus Media, even Spreadtrum, which is out of Singapore. I mean, they got smoked last week. There was a couple of different rulings. One of them is there's going to be some further review of the accounting practices by the U.S. of Chinese firms and how they're accounting for some of their various revenues, et cetera. And China also was going to be looking into how they have their listings outside of the U.S. And that is all on the heels of the reverse merger that went sour. But right now, this is not a time to be, again, I said earlier, cavalier. Markets are, in our opinion, are in a strong downtrend right now. And you'll see this on the Stocktoberfest pages where we kind of review all this, at least right now. We'll see what happens throughout the month. And, you know, September, October, generally a seasonal, very bad period for markets. And you also have a lot of things coming to a head. You know, I could say if it wasn't for Europe, if it wasn't for those high oil prices we saw a few months ago, which, by the way, oil clipped below 80 last week, down to about 78 and change, about the lowest it's been in a year. If it hadn't been for that, if it hadn't been for a slowing European situation and them raising rates, you know, when they rose, when Trichet decided to raise rates a number of months ago, which was probably one of the stupidest things that ever happened. Either he was trying to instill confidence or he just has no clue at what he's doing. I'll let you decide. And when you look at the, you know, you say if it hadn't been for that, if it hadn't been for the dollar just getting, you know, rising above close to, I think it clipped 79 when it opened this weekend, 79 on the Dixie. About a 7% move or so in the last several months. Operation Twist, which you know I wasn't in favor of, and I'm not in favor of, really did twist things around pretty dramatically, and it caused a real imbalance in the currency markets. Then you have, you know, if it hadn't been, you know, if it hadn't been Sweden or it hadn't been, or Switzerland, excuse me, or if it hadn't been Norway working their currencies, if it hadn't been the downgrade of New Zealand, I mean, all of this is happening in a very, very contracted space. The timing of it all and the movement of it all is very concerning. We had, if you recall, about a month and a half ago, we had a gentleman about cycles saying, you know, it's not the news that's causing all this, it's the cycles. I'm not sure I really buy into that, the whole cycles, you know, that they're so, you know, you could really count on them that way. But I will tell you that the cycle is really getting, you know, significantly worse. And, you know, my opinion is that, you know, right now we have to look at this as a time to start taking profits. Don't sit there and wait for the train to run you down. We talked about this and several weeks ago, but really now is the time to be, I think, very, very cautious. All right, let's switch gears for a second. The big question is, I think that everybody wants to know right now is, are we going into recession and are we in a recession and what does that mean? We talked about this with John Markman, I guess a week ago or so, 2 weeks ago. And, you know, the ECRI came out with a note last week that said that we are tipping into a recession. The ECRI has been a pretty good forecaster of recessions. They've been very accurate, I think, over the last several. And better than most others, in fact, much better. And one of the things that they talked about is that, you know, when you start moving in this direction, there's really no way to stop it. So one of the things that's happening and you need to be aware of is, and again, we talked about this with John Markman, in a recession, earnings start to slow down dramatically. And usually the peak to trough in a market during a recession is, you know, something like 30-something percent down in the market. And individual stocks get hit much harder, of course. Well, we've only seen a peak to trough already from the high to the low in the U.S. of about, I don't know, 16-17%, something like that. Clearly, we have a correction bear market, quote unquote, 20% down in the international area and in Asia, et cetera. And what we're seeing right now is the continuation of kind of the slowdown here. So that is all coming into play. And if we believe the ECRI and we believe their numbers, what do we do? You know, what are we going to do in this circumstance? Because I think this, you know, when you see the VIX is over, you know, 40 something, and when you see that you have a market that moves 2% a day easily, 3% a day from top to bottom, whether it's here or whether it is in Europe or Asia. You know, that has to get you wondering, what do I do? Now, if you're stuck and, you know, you are thinking that, wow, do I want to stay in my portfolio? Do I want to jump in here and all? This is not the time to do so. But here's what some of the things that we're doing. Number one, we're utilizing options. Now, sometimes you may think that why would you do options when the premium is so high in this area? Yeah, well, the premium's high because the opportunity to buy an option and control a large amount of whether it's a commodity, whether it's a stock, whether it's an index with a small amount of money is a great way to do it right now. So, for example, you want to buy a put on silver. You could buy it on the SLV. You want to maybe buy on a put on, for example, a index. You want to go to the SPY. One of the other things that you may want to do is looking into selling some puts. Now, for those of you that are not familiar with options, you know, you have to realize that there's two sides of every transaction. And oftentimes they say that the people selling the calls and the puts are on the side of the house. So if you feel like being on the side of the house and you want to go down that road, let's talk about how this works. So when you buy a put, it gives you the right to, on a particular stock, let's say for a second, okay, it gives you the right to sell a stock at a certain price. So let's say it's, you know, ABC stock, and you buy it at, let's say, a put that has a strike price of 100. And when the stock price goes to 90, well, you're going to sell it or short it at 100, and then you buy it back for yourself at 90. You have a $10 spread, and you make that money. Well, you may be buying it at $1 or $2, and there's two things involved. There's time, so an option has a certain amount of time where it's going to expire. So let's say it's 3 months. And it has a price, right? So it has two things going on. So you have to meet both conditions, and that's where some of the risk comes in, because if you have a time constraint on the option, what happens if you're totally right, but what happens doesn't happen within the time period you think it was going to? So you think that this stock is going below 100, but it stays at 101 right up to the day that your option expires. So what you want to do is you want to think very carefully about what the time period is. And obviously, the longer the time period, the more money you're going to spend. So now, let's take the other side. You sell the put. Well, let's say there's a stock that's currently trading at 100, and you say, you know what, I love this stock. I just love this stock. I'm willing to buy this stock right now. But you know what? How about this idea? How about if I say I will sell somebody the put, the right for them to sell the stock at 90? Means that if it's put to me, I'm on the other side, I have to buy the stock at 90, which is $10 less than it is now. Well, if I'm willing to buy it at 100, what I'm going to do is instead is sell the option to somebody, collect some money for it, dollar, per or $2, which could be, depending on how many you do, could add some serious money. And it's going to be, let's say, 3 months. And the risk I have is that the stock goes under 90, it gets put to me. I buy it for 90 minus the money I already got in, so I net out a little bit better than 90. My cost basis is even lower. And this way, one of two things happens. Either the stock is going to just go up and I'm going to miss it, and okay, and I get some money for it, or the stock's going to come down and I'm going to have to buy it and get a better cost basis. Now, what I would suggest to you is you go outside the money a bit wider than you would usually in this circumstance. But again, this is a great way to maybe accumulate shares in a down situation that you're willing to hold for a long period of time. Because don't forget, you can do one of two things. You know, you can cash out of the option, sell it for the big loss, or you could buy the shares and cover it. So selling an option, selling a put, is a bearish move with a slight bullish long-term outlook. Bearish short-term, bullish long-term. You can protect yourself by doing some covered calls where you have a stock and you can actually sell a call. So you're going to have some downside protection, some. You're going to have some upside limitation. But what the problem with that is that you have less liquidity, because now you have a stock, and you have a call against it. And if you want to move out of it, you probably want to do both at the same time. Options are less liquid. Most of them are less liquid than stocks. And then, you know, if the market's really moving against you, what does that mean? So be careful of that in a market that's moving lower. And the other thing is that I think the thing that you want to think about right now is a lot of advice is going out that you want to be in good dividend plays. I hear Kramer talking about that, once in a while when I'm passing somebody that's got it on somewhere. And he says, you know, right now is a great time to buy high dividend paying stocks. Well, the problem with that, with anybody that pays attention, is that they too go down. They may not go down as fast as a go-go growth stock. You know, as you watch Netflix just tumble down to 50, 60% from where it was. But you know what? They may take a 10 or 15% loss in a real serious market correction. And so let's see, you got 2.5%, 3% on the dividend. Well, that's better than what they're paying at the bank. But yet, I lost 10%. So now you're down 8%. Where'd that get you? You say, well, I'm going to hold the stock forever. Well, that's great. But that's not the point. The point is, if you want income, you want income. Try not to mix the two. There's really not a lot of choices right now when it comes to income-oriented investors. It's a real problem. I think that they're making a big mistake and they're really hurting a lot of the retirees out there. And unfortunately, what has to happen now is you have to rethink your entire portfolio and really set up a much different level of diversification, because you can't live on, you know, a half or 1% if you're used to living on a 5% of your portfolio value in the form of income. Prices are higher and you're getting less money, kind of like what's happening with Greece with austerity. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. So right now you need to rethink that point. So we're utilizing options to protect portfolios, scaled back dramatically over the last several months for our global allocations, virtually out of Europe. Maybe some things that are cross-continent types of investments in there. But generally speaking, we're out of that. Emerging markets scaled back a couple of weeks again on significantly. Took out the mid-cap, small caps. Where we did add, we put some puts against it. And then on the TDI managed growth strategy, as of right now, we are short Europe. And we have an option on silver on a put side. And that's kind of moves around a bit, obviously, and there's been a lot of forced selling in that area. Probably going to see a little bit of a pop on the silver up a little bit, maybe, as people are just, you know, they love just getting, and then just dropping if the dollar comes down again. You know, we have a real negative outlook on silver. If you looked at copper and you looked at some of the commodities, I mean, it's just awful, the commodities. One of the worst quarters since, if the worst quarter since the real bad quarters back in 2008 for commodities. And a lot of that has to do with the dollar rising and the fear factor out there. So what we do is, the main thing that we do also is, and I want you to think about this, you can't have a long-term, in our opinion, we can't have a very long-term outlook and a long-term positioning in a market that is so short-term oriented. And what I mean by that is that every news item moves the needle dramatically, every economic report that comes out moves things. And it is a very dangerous place to be if you're not willing to take that risk. If you're going to say, you know what, I'm buying Apple, I'm buying Amazon, I'm buying Google, I'm buying Coca-Cola, I'm buying for the long haul, and I don't care, okay, I'm not going to argue with you. But if you are, in fact, thinking about, you know, going and doing anything a little bit more constructive with your money, I think that you have to realize that, you know, you need to be, I guess, at least somewhat, you know, in the trading range right now. A lot of ways you can actually move in and out of things and use a lot of different indicators. And we're actually working on something, as a side note, where you can actually, we'll actually start sending some indications of what's appropriate levels to buy it and sell at, but that's a little off in the future. And we're going to have like a newsletter, but again, that's off in the future. So forget about that. but you know, if you do embark on the short-term trading, look at things like, I want you to look at opening range, pivot points. I want you to look at ticks, and I want you to look at the euro. If you have those charts live streaming on your desktop, I think it would be very important throughout the day, because as the euro goes, so does the markets. And you watch the tick on the NYSE, the New York Stock Exchange, you watch the divergence in things like the tick throughout the day. And then you also have in front of you things like the first 20-minute opening range, and you have in front of you the The pivot points. Also, the opening, the previous day's high, low, close, and the open for the day. Very simple, but that seems to be kind of the various lines in the sand that are being drawn. Now, we're going to close with a couple things. I want you to remember, go to Oktoberfest. We'll put a link. Hopefully, that will work, too. We'll put some links inside of this enhanced podcast. Next week, we have coming up Larry Williams. Then we have Harry Dent. We've actually talked with Guy Adami. We're supposed to get together with him this week. I don't know what happened there. We got a little bit, I guess, with the markets being crazy. Things are getting a little bit haywire. We're trying to get an interview with a couple of folks we're setting up the time with a gentleman who wrote the book What Works on Wall Street. And for the life of me, I'm having a hard time. I'm having just a brain freeze moment here. And it's not going to come to me. You know, as soon as I stop thinking about it, of course, it's going to get right to the front of my mind. And I could see his face. I could see his book. And I've actually loved his work. And I have no idea. Anyway, we'll have some economists on as well. We're going to have somebody from Briefing. And also from Bloomberg, Joseph Porcellus is going to be joining us as well. And I think that's going to be in about 3 weeks. And he's a great, great economist and works with Bloomberg. But right now, I want you to focus on a couple of things. Make sure to either follow me on Twitter at Andrew Horowitz. Go to the website to the stock area or Stocktoberfest and make sure to check that out because we're going to have all sorts of great information on there. I'd like your feedback. Please comment on what you see on the Stocktoberfest and tell me what you really, what we're doing right, what you think can be improved, et cetera. Jim O'Shaughnessy. I didn't look. It just came to me. Jim O'Shaughnessy. What Works on Wall Street. He has another book out, and we're going to bring him on as well. But I think that the main issue you need to watch right now level is clearly 1120 on the S&P 500. And we're at, I don't know, starting Monday off at 1131 or something like that. And you need to look at that. If it breaks down, there's going to be a big fight at that level. Right now, if it breaks down, you remember that bear flag that we put up for you that we're consistently following? Well, that bear flag breakdown takes us down to right about 1,000. 1050 is a big number. 1075 or 78, something like that, is a big number. But 1120 is gigantic. I think I said 1120 before. 1120 is gigantic. That was that reactionary low last month. And right now it's bounced off there. And we see a continuation of it has been until last week, lower highs, but higher lows. And if it breaks down there, you'll see that whole dimension changing. And I think there's a lot of bets that were placed at about that level, which is a Fibonacci level right around there too, that's really going to break down pretty hard. If the dollar keeps on moving up, it's going to be a big problem. And don't forget, we have about 2 weeks until we start seeing about a week and a half, actually, until we start seeing a lot of earnings come out. We have next Friday, or this Friday coming up, we have the NFP numbers, and on Wednesday we have the ADP numbers. They're somewhere, they keep on coming down now, but looking for only about 50,000 in the job growth area. And if you are hoping that there is going to be that great bill that is going to be passed by President Obama and the Congress on the Jobs Act, $400 billion, I don't think so. It looks like a DOA. There's too much going on, too much negativity surrounding how they're going to come up with that, and I just don't see any of that. But I will tell you, just as Ben Bernanke says, that you can't do it on monetary policy alone. All right, so here's the plan. The plan is that I want you to look into some puts and look at the, out of the money puts right now, because that's where you're going to get your best bang for the buck. Go through December if you have to on the SPY and on Russell. Look at the ETFs on the negative side if you're going to look to play the short. There's clearly the Russell will get hurt pretty dramatically. Look at some of the big winners of recent and especially in the luxury item area. And see if those are going to be areas that you can look at shorting. But don't get married to any position at any side, because this is going to be a whippy market. Very whippy. Until there's resolution in Europe, it's going to be this way. And that may be a while. And I want you to also look at possibly learning a little bit more about selling options, like selling puts, to actually ease yourself in at a lower price, just as a general idea. Don't have to do that right now. But look at that also, and then look into some trading things. Look up Cyber Trading University. You'll learn a lot about how to actually trade on an intraday basis if you're interested. I've taught a couple classes over there. Fausto does a great job at teaching intraday and day trading, scalp trading we call it. But this is the market that you want to do that in. It is not the buy and hold market by any means. And I think that a lot of investors that pull money out of mutual funds and ETFs like greater than it was back before in 2008. And the numbers that are coming out are pretty dramatic. Interesting, they're going to bonds. And already we're seeing some funds like money markets shut down because they just can't take any more money. The Schwab Treasury Money Market Fund, we use that a lot for our clients. It actually is not taking any more new money. This is too much. They're losing money on it. They're only making a small amount. They're subsidizing the fees on it because they can't, if you're only making, let's say, you know, 0.1 or 0.2 from the Fed and you want to pay that out and their fees are 0.5, 0.4, 0.3, whatever it is, you're going negative. So they're subsidizing that and they don't like that so much. You can't blame them. And with the yield curve getting flattened out dramatically, you have to kind of say, One other thing that I look at is watch for the long bond to turn around. It doesn't have to be right now, but when it does, I'm going to tell you, it's going to be a springboard. Right now, we're seeing the lowest rates we've seen in a long time. Mortgage rates are 50-year lows on average. But that long bond, even though the Fed is buying it and doing a pretty significant job at really crushing the yield, that can't stay that way. It's so incredibly expensive at this point. And it's almost like maybe watch the VIX to see if there's a correlation and then go the other side. Use something like a TBT or maybe short TLT and look at that as a possibility. Not now, not this moment. Clearly not until the fear is a little bit subsided, whenever that happens. That's another play you want to look at. And then start making a list of things that you want to possibly buy when the winter and the cold breaks and spring does arrive, because it does, it will eventually. You know, maybe a real mess beforehand, but it eventually arrives. Could be months. Anyway, we're going to wrap it up right there. Again, I hope you do join me next week with Larry Williams. And then again, Tom McClellan's going to be on shortly. I know there's a long list of people that are going to be lined up right now. And give me your feedback on if this was anything of interest to you. We're not going to always have a selection of charts and all that, but we'll have some things here and there that we can pass through, and we'll make sure to do that. If it works out, we'll see how it works. Thanks for joining me. Check out thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and that's our blog and our information where we post on a regular basis. And you can see everything that we wrote to our clients. Usually is private, and it's just to our client base of our daily activity and things that we do. And we open that up through the month of September. So that whole series is available to you. We're not doing that anymore. Now we're starting Stocktoberfest. So thanks for joining me. We'll see you soon. If you want to ask me any questions, ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And also follow me on Twitter at Andrew Horowitz. And what else did I want to mention to you? I think that's about all for now. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.
Oktoberfest is here. Fill your steins with German beer. Hold it high and give a cheer. Sing it out for all to hear. Then drink until it's gone. Stand and sing, I'm prosit. I'm prosit. I'm prosit. Stand and sing, I'm prosit. Oktoberfest is here.